This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. This week on Case Closed, we begin with the Joe Blair murder case from Broadway Is My Beat, their story from November 3rd, 1951. That's followed by Unit 99 and Man with Dynamite, their episode from August 30th, 1957.
Broadway's My Beat, from Times Square to Columbus Circle, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world.
Broadway's My Beat, with Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover.
The November night has a good hold on Broadway now. Broadway purrs in its embrace, rubs its cheek against the cool touch, then stops fighting it. The glitter explodes. The neon rockets its scarlet into darkness, bursts into wishing stars, cascades down on the happy event. The laughter, hoarded during the week, is spent freely now. The budget of dreams. Have one, kid. It's on me. It's the long night before Monday. Give into it. Walk a hotel corridor past a room where gaiety is registered for the night. Hung the please do not disturb sign on its door. And the room next to it, the one you're looking for.
Hi, Danny.
And it's all there waiting for you. Detective Mugovan and the boy in worn denims, a faded wool shirt sprawled in final exhaustion across the silk sheet of the hotel bed. The boy, dead of a knife wound.
Quite a party next door. You think in a hotel this class, they thicken the walls.
All right, Mugovan. What else have you got?
The kid there, stabbed under the heart. Couldn't find the knife, Danny. Couldn't even pry a visitor out of the hotel manager. They're discreet, they tell me. Don't notice unannounced visitors, like this kid must have had. That's why...
Well, just tell me what...
I was going to say, Danny. They're so discreet in this hotel, that's why the party keeps going next door. Nobody knows there's someone dead, except the manager and a couple of bellhops.
What made them sit up and take notice?
Kid's phone was off the hook. Kept lighting a light on the switchboard. But nobody said they wanted anything. A bellhop came up to find out why.
Well, who is he?
Registered Joe Blair. Identification card in his wallet says Joe Blair. That's about all there was in it. The card, some loose change, and these dime-a-dance tickets. That's his luggage on the chair. Knapsack with a tin of sardines.
This is an expensive hotel. How come...
I asked the same question of the discreet management. They say the kid came in, told him he hitched here from St. Louis, laid a $10 bill on the desk, says, give me what that buys. Yeah, just goes to show you what I... Oh. Really fun time next door, huh, Danny?
The moment gathered together and held, an instant composed of drifting laughter that seeped through a wall and added itself to the nice things furnished by the management. Then silence. The moment of requiem for a dead boy. And later, when the room has been emptied, consider the few things neatly stacked on a chair. The paraphernalia for living of a hitchhiker named Joe Blair. Knapsack, wallet, dime a dance tickets. 7th Avenue Paradise, the tickets read. Dance hall, no refunds. So walk down 2 blocks, turn left, go up a flight of steps into a place that sells its paradise for a dime a minute. And heaven is 20 girls 20 and a 4-piece band and pink lights. Walk over to the very large guardian angel in a dinner jacket. Talk to him. Watch him as he moves away from you and whispers to the lesser angels in evening gowns. And finally, as he walks back with one of them in tow, leaves her with you.
Hi.
Hello, I'm Danny Clover.
Well, the boss told me it was something special. He wasn't kidding. Mostly I tell everybody I don't get off till 3.
Police, sir.
Hey, you snapping? No, you're not, are you? Look, the boss just said you were a friend of Joe Blair. You got to understand, when I said I was off with 3 to most parties, what I meant
was... All I want you to do is tell me about Joe Blair.
Oh, he's in trouble, huh? Well, if his bail goes over $50, I'm not going to be any help at all.
Joe Blair's dead. Stabbed to death.
dead. Joe? Oh.
He was here tonight, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he was early, almost opening time. Bought 5 tickets. Well, he was standing where you were, and I was standing over there. We looked at each other and both started running, but we met him.
Did you know him before?
No, just Dango, like in Strange Romances magazines. I didn't take a ticket from him either. As a matter of fact, I threw $10 in the pot so he could have a downy place to put his curly head to sleep tonight. That's how hard the boy struck me.
Did he tell you anything about himself?
Just that he hitchhiked across the country, he was broke, and he had a guy to see in the morning. A guy named John Logan, a rich Park Avenue type Logan. Other than that, we just looked flame and fire at each other.
And that's all you can tell me, huh?
Except my name's Vicky, and you didn't ask. Joe's dead. What do you know? My name's Vicky, mister. Hi.
Excuse it, Danny. But, you know, I
get the message. You know it's late, you're tired. Give me what you got, then you can go home.
Those words, like a good night kiss. What I've got, to wit, having checked the Logans who breathe Park Avenue's air, I have come up with a Logan who fits our bill.
Hmm?
A John Logan, to whose household over the phone, the name of Joe Blair, deceased of a knife, is not unknown.
You talked to him?
Oh, how could I, Danny? Said John Logan is now in Europe, where he has been for 6 weeks, where he is partaking...
Oh, who did you talk to?
To a wife, I think. She said she was a wife. She said, yeah, I know a Joey Blair, but don't bother me no more with it, she said, as I am on my way to a ball. In the morning, bother me, honey, she said. Honey, she said. You were strange.
You did good, Gino. Go home.
You honest think I did good, Danny? So's I can relay to Mrs. T. Did you honestly...
Hey, kid, you Danny Clover.
Look, you. Danny Clover's closed for the night.
Sorry to keep you up, Danny boy, but tonight you loaded me with a big sorrow. This big, maybe bigger.
Who are you?
You walk by me maybe 8-12 times a day, and I don't register with you, huh, kid?
No, you don't.
Warm your hand in Tommy Cap's, Danny boy. Tommy Cap. Address, Broadway. Profession, Broadway.
You said I made you sad. Why?
You come to my girl, and you don't dance with her.
Vicky Harper?
You don't dance with her, and all it costs is dimes. You talk to her about a hitchhiker what stabbed in a class hotel. This kind of schmooze upsets an innocent thing like Vicky. Gives her migraines, up here. I come to protect her from...
Can't she take care of herself, Tommy?
Take care of herself? She's so stupid she gives a vag $10 to sleep on silk. That's my Vicky, innocent, good-hearted, generous with her cuts from dimes. For this, she has to suffer from policemen who come bearing only murdered hitchhikers. Why?
Stick around, Tommy. We can make you suffer, too. Because maybe you reached Joe Blair. Because maybe...
Sarge, your man's a comic. He's a comic because I got an alibi 10 blocks long. I'll give you addresses, kid. They'll treat you like a baby while you check.
I'll check. Now, good night, Gino.
Hey, Danny, your kid, how's about I give you a lift home? My car's outside. We can go anytime.
No, thanks.
How about you, Sarge? I'll ride you home to wherever you live. Brooklyn, the Bronx, Canarsie, wherever you want to
go. Well, if you're sure it's not out of your way.
What's out of my way? It's late and I ain't had man talk for days. Come on, let's go, Sarge.
Danny?
Yeah, Gino?
Just so you won't forget, I left a memo on your calendar to go see the Park Avenue Logan next a.m. Now, is it okay if
Go ahead, Gino. It's all right.
Your man said it was all right, Gino. Throw him a kiss goodnight. Where do you live, Gino? Where do you want?
And go home. Back to the room and wonder idly at the fact that there were no unfinished chess problems to solve or stamps to paste in albums, things that a man in the profession was supposed to be good at before going to bed. Just go to bed and try again for the dream you had so long ago you've forgotten what it is and not find it again. Just sleep. Sleep and wake up to morning and dress again and coffee again and to work again. To the Park Avenue address of Mrs. John Logan. Stop at the desk of the apartment hotel and be given a floor number. 3 flights up and down a hall. And stop, because a man and woman are standing in front of the door and start to turn away because they're embracing.
Hey, you.
And not quite make it.
You, come here. See what you were looking for?
I'm looking for...
Don't believe him, Al. I never saw him before in my life.
Sure, baby. Yeah. You, Say something real fine to me, Buster, like why you run up and down this hallway at practically dawn. Else, poor you, big and all, you'll bleed a lot.
Oh, yes, you will.
Police.
Oh? Show me. That's right, Mrs. Logan. The badge says police.
Oh, yes, you will. Yes, you will.
Cut it out, Ruth.
We got company, Albert. You call me Mrs. Logan, the way we said. Because I'm your employer, and I can hire you and fire you and hire you and fire you. And
you mind her? I don't mind. You know, you're lucky, mister, being a cop at a time like this. I really would have. Right through that wall there, I'd have knocked you, and I could have. Barbell muscles. I lift them.
Yeah, it's a fine form of exercise. I approve of it very much. Who are you?
Hers? Mrs. Logan's bodyguard. Like she said, hired to guard the body and the home and the welfare while Mr. Logan's in Europe.
And I miss him, too. Don't you forget that, Albert. I don't want anybody to forget that. You or any of you. Say yes, ma'am, to me, Albert.
Yes, ma'am.
A boy named Joe Blair mentioned your husband's name, Mrs. Logan.
How is old Joe? How's old Josie today, I ask you?
Dead. Murdered.
Old Josie's dead and murdered, Albert.
You'd better get some sleep, Mrs. Logan. Look, mister, I was bringing her from a party. It's my job.
Mrs. Logan, how do you know Joe Blair?
Picked the lad up in St. Louis and dumped him in Indianapolis. Hitchhiked with me. Hitchhiked, I told you, Albert.
Yes, ma'am.
On my way back from sunny California, driving along, there was he. In St. Louis, Mo. Knapsack on shoulder, thumb in the air, wind on his cheek. In Indianapolis, he moved over an inch toward me. I pulled up near a cop, smiled at Joe, and told him goodbye. My life with Joe Blair.
You want anything else with her, mister?
Yeah, I do. When she's sober, see that she gets that way.
That's my job.
Do it. I'll get around to you later, both of you.
What do you think, Danny?
What do you mean, Muggerman?
I mean, what do you think? Well, I only asked because I gave you the reports. Watched you spend 15 minutes looking at them, and now all I want is a reaction.
You want me to stand on my head?
Okay. I just thought all this data I gave you might...
You know what's in it as well as I do. Joe Blair has a record of vagrancy in a half dozen towns. That just doesn't happen to solve a murder for me. I'm sorry, but it doesn't.
Okay. I just thought there was something you might know that I don't know, and whatever was in these reports... You gonna bite my head off if I answer?
Answer.
Lieutenant Clover's office, Detective Muggerman speaking. Who? Oh, yeah. Wait till I write it down. West 68th, huh? Okay, I got it. Thanks. Danny?
Yeah?
Kid named Tommy Capp, the boy that took Tartaglia home. The call was about him.
What about him?
He's in an alley. We better go get him. Oh, now, come on! Police officers, now let us through. Break it. Why don't you go home, lady? It's supper time. There he is, Danny. We got him, all right. Yeah, we got him.
It wasn't that way at all. We didn't have him. The thing that had Tommy Capp, the thing that had fixed his hands in half-open fist... for something else. The heavy nail driven through a fence a long time ago, its point bared through a rotting 2x4. That was it. Tommy Capp had been pushed against it, and it held him, killed him.
You are listening to Broadway is My Beat, written by Morton Fine and David Friedkin, and starring Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover. The Sunday afternoon edition of CBS Radio World News Roundup, broadcast on most of these same stations, keeps you up to date at all times. There's hard-hitting news and analysis by noted CBS radio reporters Bill Shedell, Howard K. Smith from London, Charles Collingwood covering the nation's capital, and UN correspondent Larry Lesser. Every Sunday, CBS Radio's great team of correspondents and reporters give you their weekend of observations as well as the news that will shape history in the days and weeks to come.
The sounds you hear on Broadway are fragments, words broken off and wind-blown that drift your way, the swift dart of subway noises, and a horn, and a whistle, and footsteps, the brief, wild sob of the faraway river. You've got to listen close so you'll know if that sound began with laughter or despair. The difference it makes, not much. Broadway reacts to clowns and death in nearly the same way. The blonde who had a little accident on the street corner, or the dead man you saw propped against a fence in an alley. Something to tell your family about. How the policeman pushed you back so you couldn't see how it all ended. But I saw. I had to stay to the end. Until Tommy Capp was lifted down and shrouded and taken away. Until Tommy Capp was made a matter of official concern. Then I left. Go to a place, back to headquarters, write it down, to be transcribed later by a stenographer, to be dated by a dater, stamped by a stamper, to be put in a file by a clerk.
I just came from records, Danny. Just about through running Tommy Capp's card through the IBM.
Anything?
Just about what we figured.
Petty stuff.
Yeah. He was a steerer, Danny. You know, a kid latched on to convention people, showed them bars, took them to the Village, Harlem.
How come he had a record?
A little trouble conning the ladies a couple of times.
Oh? How?
He'd promote them for neckties, maybe a sport jacket, meals. The couple times we know about, he tried to put the bite on him for dough. $200-$300. Twice the lady squawked.
Uh-huh. Well, did you get his address?
Sure. Rooming house off of West 49th. Might be something interesting there. I don't know.
You mean it's an interesting rooming house, Muggerman? A landmark or something?
Why don't you ever let me finish anything, Danny?
I'm sorry. What about it?
Not the rooming house, the roommate. A musician, a piano player named Norm Persak. What's interesting is he plays piano at the 7th Avenue Paradise, that dime a dance joint. You think that's interesting, Danny?
Yeah, I think that's interesting. Thanks, Muggerman. Thanks a lot.
Man, I thought you'd never come.
You Norm Persak?
The one, the only Norm Persak. Come in, man. Don't stand that open doorway. That way lies madness. First, you listen to this, man. You close your eyes and listen to this.
All right.
I just found it. I reached out, and there it was waiting for me. You hear that? You hear the melody? You hear the song?
It's different.
Yeah. You got a real taste for a policeman, man.
How did you know I was...
Are you kidding, man? You made a stir at the 7th Avenue Paradise last night. Norm Persak never forgets.
And why I'm here, you know that, too?
Sure, man, because I feel it. You can ask me why my roomie is dead, why Tommy Capp died like that on a nail.
That's right.
I don't know. If I could figure those things, man...
You see Tommy last night?
Yeah, twice. Once in the night, the next time around dawn. That's the crazy time.
Tell me about it.
Night, Tommy walks in here, dons a Brooks Brothers suit, you know, with a bench in the back.
Yeah.
Flips the vents at me, walks out.
The other time?
Dawn. Tommy walks in on me, gathers up his silk shirts, the ties that glow in the dark, throws a kiss, says, "See you around, kid, this is farewell to nothing." His parting words.
He tell you where he'd been, where he was going?
He said where he was going. Stands because he hit me for $50 before he left. $50 for wires.
Wires?
Telegrams. They sell them down the corner hotel, you know.
Yeah, I know.
You're lucky, man. Here, I'll give you a song to exit on.
And go to the corner hotel, show a badge, ask a question. Let the whispers make the rounds of the palm-decked lobby. And finally, let them come back to you in the shape of a man who pokes his pince-nez at your lapel.
Now, look here, you.
Well, anything you say.
You could have come in the back door. This is a family hotel. Some of our people even have children.
I'll try to set a good example, Mr...
Rocket. Francis Rocket. Now just what is it you want of us?
Man came here last night, Mr. Rocket, late, to send some telegrams.
Sometimes wanderers come in off the street and do that in here.
This man was different. He sent them, walked out of here, then was found in an alley, murdered.
Well, that'd be Tommy Capp. The Times mentioned it today. I often told that boy it'd end that way, in an alley, if he persisted in
playing. Could you tell me, Mr. Rocket, who he sent them to? You could keep a record or something that would...
To hotels, to every major hotel between here and...
He sent them to... To what?
Pay attention, please. To hotels. The exclusive ones between here and St. Louis. The Mayberry in Indianapolis, the Region in Columbus, etc., etc., etc. I call the list for him from our owner's hotel guide.
You remember what he said in them?
I only counted the words, sir. I didn't stoop to explore their meaning. I could tell you this, however, if you...
Tell me.
He requested an answer to his query in each. A care of this hotel, collect. None have come in as yet. However, when they do, I'm afraid... Collect... I'm afraid.
Don't be afraid anymore, Mr. Rocket. When they come, just phone them into us. We've got a fund for collect telegrams.
Good for you. You're finished with me, I presume? Of course you are.
Yes, Mr. Rocket. Yeah, I have that, huh? Yeah, Indianapolis. Columbus. Yeah, yeah. Springfield, too. Thanks for calling again, Mr. Rocket. You heard, Danny?
Nothing from any of those places either, huh?
Same answers as from Wheeling and Pittsburgh and Harrisburg. Mm. No one registered by the name of Ruth Logan in any of the big cities on the route. It's not positive, Danny, but... Oh, hi, Gino.
Detective, you summoned me to your presence, Danny?
Yeah, I did, Gino. Last night, Tommy Capp drove you home, didn't he?
Oh, no, he did not, Danny. He remembered after we drove for a little while a most pressing engagement, to phrase him. So he dropped me at a subway station and waved me a cheery farewell.
While you were driving, Gino, did you talk about anything?
A most refreshing conversation, Danny. About his work, about my work, man to man, straight from the shoulder.
You didn't mention anything about the Logans, did you, Gino?
You know I know better than that, Muggerman. I've been in this business 20 years. You should behave outside of the shop as good as me.
Gino... Gino, did he try to talk to you about the Logans?
Indeed, he made mention of saying, but I deftly sidestepped the issue. That's when he dropped me. What else is on your gentleman's mind?
Nothing, Gino. Nothing at all.
Hello. Hey, hello.
I'm Danny Clover, Mrs. Logan.
I met you in a haze once, didn't I?
Right here, Mrs. Logan, this morning.
Come in. There's nobody here but Albert. Hey, Albert. We know him, don't we?
You back again, Buster?
I'm interrupting something.
I'm teaching the ape a waltz. Watch it. Come on, Albert.
Now, look, baby.
Say yes, ma'am, Albert.
Yes, ma'am, but I ain't waltzing.
We didn't before anyhow, did we? Did we? Turn off the record, Albert.
Yes, ma'am. We ran it down this morning, mister.
Did I have fun, mister? Hi, mister.
This morning we talked about Joe Blair. You remember that?
Every word of it.
I'm glad you do, Mrs. Logan, because now it's got another murder in it.
Look, mister, I'm paid...
I know you're employed. You get hired and fired.
Then hired again. You waltz? Come on, waltz. Don't stand there, mister. Waltz with me.
Leave him alone. Stop making a jerk out of yourself.
Say please, Al.
A man walks in here and talks about two murders, and I'm going to say please. You're a jerk, Ruth. J-E-R-K, jerk.
The ape spell. Give him a penny, mister.
You people want to perform, go right ahead. I'm still going to talk about the murder.
All right. We'll listen. Won't we listen, Albert?
A question, Mrs. Logan.
All right.
You left Joe Blair off in Indianapolis, and you kept right on going, that right?
Right. Right.
From Indianapolis, where did you go?
Columbus. I stayed there overnight.
Where'd you stay? What hotel?
The Regent, where I always stay. I think it was a Regent. Maybe it wasn't.
It wasn't. It wasn't at any other first-rate hotel in Columbus.
I always stay at first-rate hotels. I was at the Regent.
We've checked every good hotel between St. Louis and New York and most of the motels. You didn't stay at any of them.
Isn't he clever, Albert? You should be like him.
Buster's getting interested. Let's listen, huh?
You drove right through, didn't you, Mrs. Logan?
I'm a frail little girl. That's a long, long ride for a frail little girl.
Not if Joe Blair helped you drive. He must have been pretty good company.
Curly-headed company. All the way from St. Louis.
He must have been interesting.
Curly-headed.
And you must have interested him. He got to New York and he didn't want to let you go.
He gets cleverer all the time, doesn't he, Albert?
Yeah.
On the trip cross-country, he found out you were wealthy, you were married. He figured he had a good thing, called you, made you meet him at his hotel.
When this is over, Albert will waltz and waltz.
Yeah, yes, sir.
You met him, Mrs. Larkin, decided you were a fool to have ever picked him up in the first place. A knife got mixed up in it, and when you walked out of his room, Joe was dead.
If what you say is true, then I'm a murderess. Did you hear that, Albert?
Someone else figured all this before the police did. Tommy Capp, he found out about a hitchhiker mixed up with a wealthy married woman, so he checked all the hotels between here and St. Louis for blackmail purposes.
You're right, baby. The mister is clever.
We're going to waltz, Albert. Don't forget.
So Ruth sent you, Albert, to have a little talk with him.
In an alley. Where you're going.
You killed him.
An accident. He backed into a nail. Maybe I'll find one for you.
There's a lot about this dancing I haven't taught you, Albert. Oh. Our song, Ape. Chill you? Second.
Okay, if you want it this way, Albert. You ready, Mrs. Logan?
Or you'll make me go?
Or I'll make you go.
I wouldn't give you the pleasure. Anytime you say, mister.
The wheel spins on Broadway, and you bet against the dealers of the night, on the blood red of neon, on the black of the searching wind. Pick a color and make a prayer, and the wheel stops. The red pays off with heartbreak, and the black with dust in your mouth. It's Broadway, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway. My beat.
Broadway's My Beat stars Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover, with Charles Calvert as Tartaglia and Jack Crucian as Mugovan. The program was produced and directed by Elliot Lewis, with musical score composed and conducted by Alexander Courage. In tonight's story, Kathy Lewis was heard as Ruth Logan, Ed Max as Al Mundo, High Everback as Norm Persak, Paula Victor as Vicky, and Billy Happa as Tommy Capp. Lovers of fine music are already familiar with the strong, melodious voices of the Choraliers on CBS Radio. This is to remind our many Sunday night Choraliers listeners that this excellent choral group will be heard at a new, earlier time on most of these stations starting tomorrow. Bill Anders speaking. This is the CBS Radio Network. Thank you.
Sacramento Police. Unit 99, are you in the clear?
Unit 99 to KMA 907. Unit 99, Sergeant Meredith, 909, in service, on the air. This is Sergeant Dan Meredith of Unit 99 at Headquarters, Police Department, City of Sacramento, California. My detail is to ride in Unit 99, our tape recorder-equipped radio car, and to respond whenever the dispatcher transmits a signal to one of our other units on duty somewhere in the city. At the scene, we make the recordings which we provide for the broadcasting company for this program. Now, to tell you more about Unit 99, here is our chief, James Lee Hicks, Sacramento Police.
Unit 99 is a regulation radio patrol unit of the Sacramento Police Department, cruising the streets with a tape recorder. Sergeant Meredith is on duty and works for your protection, as every police officer does. He can and does make arrests. His orders are to respond to the radio call. You go with him, and what you hear is real. Police, criminals, victims, and witnesses are all real. And whether an arrest is made or the subject released, what happens is real. Make no mistake about that. Now to Unit 99 and Sergeant Dan Meredith on duty.
Unit 99.
99, go ahead.
924, second floor, 99.
Second floor, roger.
Check 99, KM907.
We've just received a call from the sergeant's office, police headquarters. Don't know what it is right now, but we'll check it when we get in. We're at police headquarters in the basement. There's Morrison and his partner, Devers. Hi, Pete. I got a call to come in, and can you give us a full story on this?
We received a call at 4th and K King in regards to a man being robbed on the city streets. And he stated he lost a ring, possibly valued at $900. While placing the man into the squad car to bring him to the station for further questioning, a stick of dynamite dropped out of his pocket and landed on the city sidewalk. My partner and I then began searching the man and found another stick of dynamite in his right front pocket. Also, five detonator caps in his right front shirt pocket.
Was this dynamite fused?
Yes, one was.
Where is this fellow now?
We have him in custody.
You going to talk further with him?
We will.
Okay, you sit down there.
Yeah. What were you going to do with this dynamite?
I was going over to Eureka.
You're going to Eureka with
Eureka,
the dynamite?
Eureka, Nevada.
For what reason?
Well, I'm going over there. We got a little hole in the ground over there, see?
Were you going to use this dynamite for blasting?
Yeah.
Now, do you carry this dynamite?
Yeah, that's right. Some of you guys run around with a gun, so, you know, I don't go with a gun. I go with this doohickey. I like it. I've been all my life with it, see? All my life with it.
Tonight, when these two men are supposed to jump you on the street.
Wasn't supposed to. They did.
They did.
Yeah. They tore that baby off, you know, and that was beautiful as a stone.
And you claim that you lost the diamond ring.
Yeah, they tore it off. There's a woman seen them take it off.
Yeah, we have that woman's name.
Yeah.
Where did you get that diamond ring?
Kurt Stone.
Where did you get that diamond ring?
Over in South Africa.
South Africa. You were in South Africa?
Oh, what do you mean, boy? All over the world.
Sure. The time of my partner, Dever, picked you up and put you in the police car, do you know anything about the dynamite being in your pocket that time?
Sure, I have it. I think I have it.
Miner, or what are you? Anyway, what kind of work do you do?
That's right.
That's the reason you carry the dynamite?
No, because I love it.
You got any idea of using it in Sacramento for anything? Huh?
Guy, you just don't understand, sir.
No, I don't know why you'd carry it in town with you.
I'm going over to Eureka, Nevada. And I wanted to go and get a room. Boy, they grabbed me there, and then that's it.
You're experienced with dynamite, aren't you? You've had a lot of experience with it. Well, you usually carry it fused like that in your pocket. Isn't that a chance of it going off?
No.
It can't go off?
No.
Well, those detonators are pretty touchy. Don't they go off fairly easy sometimes?
Well, take the baby out here and take a 30-yard section. You can't knock it off.
Well, the one that you have fused, if you put that into an electric light socket, would it go off?
Or if you had a flashlight cell. See, top and bottom, see? Mm-hmm. That'd be positive, see? Sure it would go.
Yes. How much damage would that stick of dynamite do?
Well, it, you'd get kind of sick.
Would you say it would blow the size of this room all to pieces?
Oh, no, 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 no. I'll take the baby right over there, and I'll put it right back in there, and I'll sit right here and knock it off. Explosives is a science.
How long have you been at this?
40, 50 years.
How old a man are you?
67 years old.
Where'd you get the dynamite?
Bought it.
Where at?
Placerville.
How'd you get the dynamite from Placerville down to Sacramento?
I had it in my pocket.
Oh, how'd you get from Placerville to Sacramento?
On the stage.
Oh, on a bus? On
yeah,
a stage?
Yeah.
And you carried that dynamite?
I'm going to Eureka, see?
Mm-hmm. But you carried that...
I wrote the old gal and told her I was coming over there, see? And
you carried that dynamite in your pockets on the bus
to Sacramento? Yeah.
Then walked the city streets looking for a room with the dynamite in your possession?
That's right. Let me tell you something. I never run around with a gun, sir. But explosives is my whole life, sir. And I run around with explosives all my life. And you go up into Placerville.
Wait a minute.
I'm going to tell you something. You go up in Placerville, and you know I come down, and I got a lot of gold, see. And Westone and I, we go down and sell this gold. And we're going back up the hill, and the guy won't give me a new bottle, see. So I go over there, and
that
I...
Drink prohibition?
I put a stick of powder in the bar, and I put the doohickey in it, and I light the gadget. When they all got out, I cut the baby off, and I get me the bottle, and I went over and sit down.
In 1936, you were picked up for vagrancy up in El Dorado County. Also,
I never was pinched for a vagrancy.
Although, also, at that time, you were charged carrying dynamite at that time, transporting dynamite. Is that correct? In 1936, you were charged with carrying dynamite, according to your report.
No. I stole it.
You stole the dynamite in 1936,
right.
But you had it on your possession,
yeah.
And you were charged with carrying dynamite.
Well, Pete and Devers, what's this man charged on now?
We charge him with a felony in possession of dynamite.
This man was an old-time miner, a familiar figure in the Motherlode country, and obviously well acquainted with explosives. Although the presence of a fused stick of dynamite in his pocket was sufficient to arouse apprehension, expert testimony at his trial established the fact that the dynamite, in that condition, was comparatively harmless and the charge was dismissed.
Unit 3.
285-287. 268-284. Unit 5, you got any back?
460 in progress at the butane plant, 10th and North B.
Okay, check.
Check 5. 285-287. Unit 5, there's a private patrolman over there. Unit 1. Unit 56.
56.
Cover in on 460 at 10th and North B.
10th and North B.
Check 56. Unit calling, go ahead.
287-285, you call us?
Yes, 285-287. There's a report of 460 in building. 10th and North B. Enter through the rear.
260-284, we're over that way.
Check. There's a report of two suspects in the building. All units.
Unit 1, we're 909. That call was unfounded. You wanted the 10th and North B?
Yes, 1. Give me 907.
It's a burglary in progress. Two men in a building. 10th and North B, north side of town. Several units are called in on it. We'll respond also. Several units here already. Let's get out. We're going around to the rear of the plant. Captain Ledoux is leading. We have a full view of the front part of the building. The officers are going over. There's two detectives down at the end, Mohanovich and his partner, along with Sergeant Ray Daner. They're inside now. Detective Oakes is also in. The office area of the building is all lighted. It's now pretty well covered by the officers on the inside.
Supposed to be a watchman over here someplace.
Yes, Captain. I hope he's all right. The two additional officers just scaled the fence.
Something going back there, running back there.
What's it look like, Fox?
I'm holding him back there.
Got him.
You got him back there?
Yeah.
Were they in the joint?
I don't know. I don't think so. Just working on it.
Who got him, Mohanovich?
I don't know who the officer, I believe, but was it Rath?
Well, there's two motorcycles out here.
It was Rath and, Rath and his partner. They were being watched by that special agent.
Huh?
Special agent said he'd been watching him for about 15 minutes, waiting for him to make that entry.
Oh, the special agent from the SP?
I believe it was, yes, Dan.
No, they're bringing him out.
Yeah, they'll be bringing him out shortly.
Well, here they come.
Great, isn't it?
Yeah, here they come now, Tiny. There's quite a few officers there, I can see. It appears to be two suspects.
Torchlight procession.
Several spotlights and flashlights illuminating the area. Who'd they say got him? Rath and his partner?
A couple of motorcycle men.
Yeah. They're no doubt the first ones here. Sergeant Daner, Detective Oakes, Fox, a special agent from the Southern Pacific, Officer Farnsworth and Rath of the Traffic Division, two young men. See, they threw a pair of shoes over the fence. One is barefooted. Farnsworth?
Yeah.
You and Rath get this fella, these fellas?
Yes, they started to run away just as we got to the back of the building there. They started pulling, talking when we drew our guns and told them to holler, we'd shoot. And they stopped almost immediately and held up their hands, told them to face the wall, spread their hands and legs apart. We entered over through the fence. Officer Rath entered through the fence and began to search one of the parties while I covered him. They tried to enter the building. They hadn't actually entered it. They were trying to enter and they were picking up pieces of metal or something around the back of the building. And they deny trying to enter it.
Mm-hmm. Took them any tools or anything?
I picked a knife and a looks something like a
looks like a Jimmy bar.
Jimmy tool, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Here comes the last suspect over.
Yeah.
Yeah, take him in.
The detectives are going to take him in for questioning. Putting the suspects in separate interrogation rooms. Rath and Farnsworth, I see you have some properties taken off of these culprits.
Well, off of the suspect that I searched, I found a pocket knife and a jimmy tool.
And how about your man, Rath?
My man had a pair of gloves on at the time he was stopped. He had a flashlight in his pocket. He had a pair of wire cutters, diagonals, and a knife in his pocket. He claims that he carries this stuff with him all the time, and the gloves he just happened to have with him to use, and he put them on to climb over the wire fence.
Did they both have gloves on?
They both had gloves on at the time they were arrested.
Let's ask him a couple of questions, huh?
Sure.
All right.
Go on in, Farnsworth. Rath. Okay, we want to ask you a couple of questions here.
What were you doing with this stuff here tonight? We have a pair of gloves and a flashlight and a pair of diagonals and a knife here. What were you doing with these things?
I always carry a pair of pliers or these. I had these down in my pocket really at home working with them. Now, on the screen door, see? I just happened to stick them down in my jacket pocket. Of course, the flashlight, a lot of times I go up to the pool hall there. I've only lived about 3 blocks from the pool hall. I usually stick one, you know, and have to walk back home with in the dark. You know, sometimes I go up there and stay till 10:30, 11 o'clock.
Where did you come from before you got to the place you were arrested?
From that tavern over here where his car's parked.
Mm-hmm. And from there, how did you get over to the place where you were arrested?
We went right across the corner there, over there, because that's where I told you we'd seen the lights.
Where did you take the car to?
Well, the car's sitting there at the tavern.
Or why didn't you take the car with you?
Well, what do you think? We'd drive the car up there. If it was, would get out of there. We'd got away anyway on us, ever it was. Now, I don't know. They might not even be in a bother thing. The guys was walking along there now.
How far is the car from the place you were arrested?
Well, I couldn't say just how far. I'd say, maybe half a quarter of a mile.
Why did you walk over to this place where you were arrested?
We threw these guys over this light, and I told this one guy, I said, there's somebody over there with a light.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's a junkyard right over this way, and then them cars along in the railroad track.
Yes. Yeah.
So we went, just run straight across that lot down through there. And so I told him, I said, well, here we have to go over this fence. I said, I'm going to slip my gloves on. Then I skipped my finger there going over the fence.
We have a statement from a other officer there that you were trying to get in the window. Is that true?
No, I wasn't up to no window. I was up there by that building on by the corner. Yeah.
Was your partner trying to get in the window?
No, I didn't see him if he was. Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm. Why were you there by the window?
Well, that's where we saw those guys went around there on those cars.
Why didn't?
Best I could see.
Why didn't you call a policeman instead of going in there?
Well, that's what we should have done, really.
That's
right. I'll be honest with you. That's what we should have done.
Things just don't add up with all this tools, gloves, and a pair of wire cutters and a flashlight. They just don't add up.
Well, that's whatever you guys. Thanks. Told you my best.
Why don't you tell us the right story now?
That's right.
Why don't you tell us what you expected?
I didn't touch a window on that building, however, myself at all.
What did you hope to find in there?
I didn't even expect to go down and find anything, because I didn't go down and find anything.
Didn't you climb the fence?
Yeah, we went over the fence. But didn't know the other fence is on the other side, see?
Didn't you know that was a violation of the law?
Yes,
trespassing?
I knew that. Yes, sir. I sure did.
Where do you work?
I haven't worked too much this winter at all.
When's the last time you worked?
Well, during the cannon season, tomatoes at Burkhart and Richards. Then I had one little job with some guy up there in Gardenland building one of those concrete block buildings. Then I worked over here with him on the same job, building a room on a patio for a guy way over here in Fruit Ridge.
All right. How do you maintain yourself from day to day if you're not working steady?
Well, I'm usually there at home at the pool hall. You can check at the pool hall there and find out. I'm out there pretty near every day at the pool hall.
What do you do at the pool hall?
Well, I play a little pool once in a while. Once in a while, I just sit around watching.
What do you do for maintaining yourself? What I mean as far as
financially, is that what
yes,
you mean?
For your...
Well, my wife, she works, and only every few nickels I get, she gives them to me. Or the girl, I borrow sometimes off her. She works over here in town.
Have you got any money on you now?
No, I haven't.
Where did you expect to find some money tonight?
No, I wasn't even looking for any money.
What were you doing when you first observed these two fellows going over the fences, you say?
Well, that's when I told this boy. I said, there's somebody going.
Where were you at that time?
Well, we was up there just getting out of the car.
Out where?
By the tavern there.
By the tavern.
Yeah, we stand out by the car.
Mm-hmm. A quarter of a mile away.
Well, it was, I don't know whether it's a quarter or not, maybe not
it's
quite.
It's more than a quarter.
Well, whatever it is, quarter.
You have pretty good eyesight over there where it's all dark.
Well, of course, naturally, a guy can see a flashlight in the, you know, a light.
Yeah.
See, that's how, otherwise, if you had no light or anything, you couldn't see him, no.
Well, you're.
No, you couldn't see
your him. Your partner tells us a different story in here.
Well, whatever he tells you. Now, that's the way I saw it. That's
he tells us a different story.
Well, what if he tells
you? That isn't what he said at all.
After all this trouble, you got to get over the wire fence. What happened to the other two fellas that you saw in there in the first place?
Well, that's really honest to be with you. I don't think he was in that lot now. I think it was over the fence by the railroad tracks.
So you don't think they were there at all?
Yes, we see the thing right there.
Yep. Well, did you see anybody?
Yeah.
You saw a person in there?
No. Now, they weren't in that. I wouldn't say it was in the pen at all. In that fence, you know. They could be on the outside, just as well with a light. But there was a light over there. That's when I saw it. And it was, it's like he was carrying a lantern or a flashlight.
Farnsworth, is there a discrepancy in the stories of the two fellows?
Yes. One fellow states that they were driving by the driver of the car. States that they were driving by when they noticed two fellows going over the fence. Now, this is a discrepancy against the story of the second man, which states that they were a quarter of a mile away or so when they saw, getting out of the car, saw these two fellows going over the fence or saw the flashlights.
Mm-hmm. What are they going to be booked on?
We're going to book them on charge of burglary, and the detectives will follow up.
During his career, a police officer hears many stories and alibis. But the story told by the burglar suspect, whose arrest you covered tonight, was completely implausible. In addition, his friend told a conflicting story. As a matter of fact, both were lying, and subsequent questioning brought out the admission that they planned to break into the place. They also admitted other burglaries and were held to answer.
This is Unit 99 in Sacramento, California. These on-the-scene tape recordings were provided by the Sacramento Police Department and were made on duty by Sergeant Dan Meredith in Unit 99. Your host is Chief James V. Hicks of the Sacramento Police Department. Be with us when once again you will hear...
KMA 907, Sacramento Police. Unit 99, are you in the clear?
Unit 99 to KMA 907. Unit 99, Sergeant Meredith, 909, in service, on the air.
You have just heard an authentic police action as reported by Sergeant Dan Meredith in Unit 99, in service, on the air. Next week at the same time, another on-the-spot tape-recorded event presented in cooperation with the Sacramento Police Department by the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service. Thank you.
that's it for Case Closed this week. You can find more Broadway Is My Beat. I think this may be the first time we've heard of Unit 99, but if there's more, just visit relicradio.com. Search it out, see what's available. You can find past episodes of Case Closed there as well, and the other podcasts, our Shoutcast stream. You can donate through the website as well if you'd like to help this and all the shows out. My thanks, as always, to those who have, and thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.